Hello, who's here?
Tasso.
Hello, Tasso.
How you doing?
Who else? Was that Troy? Is that Troy far away from the phone?
Sounds like Troy yelling in the background for his life.
He's far away. Troy, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
So can I ask you about the hospital? Or you want to talk about it?
Who are you talking to me?
Troy.
You mean from the Facebook post?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was, I have AFib. So that was when we didn't know what was going on. And it was just out of whack. And so I went to the hospital, was there a couple of days. So that was it was 11 years ago. That was a long time ago.
Did they do a procedure, like an ablation or something, or they just kept an eye on you for 11 days?
No. It was 11 years ago. I was only there for a day and a half. And it went back in on its own. But it still has an underlying. Every time I wear a halter, it's still there. But it's not to a point that it impacts my life at all, per se. So it's not worth the risk of an ablation for me. So,
right.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so I know we just kind of had a little text exchange because I was concerned when I saw that. But it sounds like things are going great. You want to share any of that?
Everything right this second is awesome. I just signed up, well, in essence, 5 new people, which are continuing on. One person signed up the 6th and got home and did their own little research on terms and decided that it wasn't for them. And I just think that was more of a financial thing, really, than anything else. But just got back from an amazing vacation to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, which is always awesome. That was 11 days, so I liked that. And then came back and booked a Vegas trip for 7 days, which has some incredible stuff, excursions out of the town. But the girl I'm dating has never been to Vegas, so it'll be a good experience for her. But I didn't want to stay in Vegas for 7 days. But the price was equal to a 4-day trip. So I thought, well, I'll take the 7 days. So, yeah, everything's going great right now.
I asked Troy to go to Vegas with me. He said, no, screw you.
That's right. You're not quite as pretty as she is.
Yeah. Well, given the choice of going to Vegas with Tasso or your girlfriend, I don't know. It doesn't seem like much of a toss-up to me. I get it.
I'm more fun.
It's a different kind of fun.
Well, that's it for me. I mean, it's knock on wood right this second, you know. But that's
You said they looked up terms. So when you say that, it kind of sounds like they looked up the terms of a contract, but that's not what you meant, right?
Well, I just talked about, because she was like, literally, she had the highest score on the, not the inflammation one, but the other
one. The REMAS quiz.
The other one. There's one more.
Oh, the
but
symptoms
anyways,
checklist.
Yeah, so she had the worst score on all of the tests that I gave her. And so
wow.
I was plugging into the reboot. And, you know, I was just talking about the difference between, you know, different training techniques. And I used the word biohacking and I used the word all-out burst. And didn't really explain the details of that necessarily. She looked up something called microburst. And it's no big deal. It's like,
okay,
that's all right. One of those people that you go, yeah, I probably didn't want to work with her anyway. I wanted to help her get better, but she just didn't have the right personality to fit in with the culture of my life. So.
Right, and probably a reason that she got that super high score.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, she's probably closed-minded to a lot of things that might help her if she let it go that far, you know?
For sure.
And while we definitely want to help everybody we meet, I think with maturity we learn there is sometimes that it's best to go, you live your life and I live mine, because those people are difficult. They become a burden for us emotionally, right? I don't know that for sure about her, but from what you're saying, in my mind, she goes into that category of kind of better off without, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And so it wasn't a depressing thing for me. I mean, I like to make money, but on the other hand, I don't want to distress myself and be all challenged with trying to please her when there's no pleasing a person. So,
right.
Yeah, no, it's all good.
Okay, good. I'd like to hear that. Tasso, what's going on with you?
Well, We closed on the sale of the club yesterday.
Congratulations. And wow, that's great news. That's great news.
Waiting for the wire transfer to come through. We're in this building for two more weeks, and then I'm running back and forth between construction at the new site and this place, and working the contractor for the buyer so they can get into certain parts of the building and that type of thing. So it's been rather hectic.
Well, Tom, you and I spoke privately, and I said to you, and I meant this, this keeps you young. And in a way, I have some envy for you because I love that stage of a business. I love the chaos and energy that comes with constructing something and knowing what it's going to be. And certainly there is stress attached to it, but it's balanced by your excitement and what you're putting together, right? So I get that. I love that. So I'm happy for you with this.
And I, Phil, I was going to call you after this call, set up time with you. But, I have a couple thoughts on my mind that involve your presence as well as input. Number one is tomorrow I'm going to have a town hall meeting with my members to tell them what we're going to be going into. And I've referred in a letter to my members as our new business model for what we are going to do for the next several decades of changing people's lives by reversing chronic disease and returning the energy of their life to them.
Good.
And so I'm going to tell them where we're going to be located, how the membership structure is going to be formatted, and that we're probably going to lose 15 days of work here at this club because I don't think we can get open until December 15th. So the two points come into being. Number one is I'd like to talk to you about just purchasing the materials to produce myself or to go jointly with you and do like a 12 days of fitness for my membership.
Well, I think this might be perfect timing because on Monday I have the Thanksgiving pre-tox starting with the Alive group. And then the following Monday we start the 12 days of fitness. So it might be a perfect tie-in. So this is easy.
Okay. And then the second part of it is that in late January I'm doing a thank you and gratitude dinner for everybody that's ever been a member of our club. So we're expecting probably 500 to 700 people to show up. And so at that, it's going to be like stations with a formal presentation and like thank you speech at like 7:30, 8 o'clock. And at that time, I want to be able to give people something to take home, a token to take home, but attached to it will be an offer for a one-time-a-week one-on-one membership with us, and telling them that we only have 75 of those available.
What's the offer?
What is the offer, though?
What's the dollar amount? What is the offer?
One time a week one-on-one training for $189
right.
a month.
Including open access to the club?
Well, open access, that's what I'm trying to define now, Phil. I'm down there working, trying to find out what we'll be able to accommodate.
Okay.
As far as that. So I don't have a true defined offer yet, but that's the neighborhood of what I want it to be.
Okay.
And then I thought about saying, well, maybe have Phil come up as the special presenter to present REMAS or present reversing chronic disease, a short presentation on it. That would fire people up to say, well, this is going to be part of the whole emphasis of what bodies represents over the next decade.
Okay. Good. Good. So, yeah, let's continue this outside of this call, but 100% yes to whatever you're thinking.
Okay.
Okay, so this sounds really good. You're going to lose how many members, do you think?
Well, we're going to lose about 600 general membership. Out of my 200 one-on-ones, I suspect we'll lose 20% because they just won't drive past that one line. It's 9 minutes away from us here, but for those people, because they live west of the club, it's more like 20 minutes for them. So I think we're going to probably lose a portion of those, but I think overall we'll maintain 80% of our membership. What I've already seen is, like, I spoke to a member who lives on the south end, a former member who used to live in Ormond Beach, and they live down in Ponce Inlet, which is about from our current location, about 40 minutes away. And I told him where we were moving. He said, oh, well, that's by my office. I can make it there. I'm coming back. So I think we're going to pick a lot of people up from Port Orange. And there is a Brown & Brown, a big insurance company, just opened their national headquarters about a mile from the new location. There's 3,000 people there. Average salary in that place is about $200,000 a year. And then right across the street from where we'll be, there's 1,500 residents, which their condos range anywhere from 400,000 up to $1.5 million. And their maintenance would be run $600 to $1,000 a month.
And what happens to your monthly nut?
It goes from being about $42,000 a month down to being about $9,000.
Wow.
You're in good shape, man. It's good. And the money's in the bank from the closing?
We're waiting for the email that says it's been electronically wired to the bank.
This is a good time for you. I'm really happy. This is exciting.
That's why I'm still sober for this call.
And as far as the dinner that you're having, you're paying for that?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Is it like a sit-down dinner with people being served?
No, because the facility that I'm going to use, it's a riverfront facility. It's really nice and prestigious. It's behind our church, and it's where we host the Greek festival. So it can only hold about 250 people seating, but because the back patio can hold about 600 people easily. So I'm going to have it set up, which will be cheaper for me, to have stations that are manned. Like here's an Italian station, here's a chicken station, here's a, you know, so there'll be different stations throughout the property.
Souvlaki?
Souvlaki will be there, yes.
Good. Good. Heroes?
Euros. I don't know if we want any euros. We just served 11,000 of those over the past weekend. So I don't know if I'm up for serving any of those. Plus, you know, we do them off the spit, and a caterer coming in won't have the spit to do them off of like we do, so they're not as good.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm excited for you. I really am. I think this is great. This was a long time coming, so this is an exciting time. And honestly, I have to share with you that I find – that the anticipation and the beginning stages and the promotion is actually more exciting than the actual operation. Like once you get to the operation, you go, what else can I take on? So this is when it gets really exciting. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's like you say, that excitement and anticipation of it, you're excited because like every time your phone rings, it's either opportunity or catastrophe that you got to handle, you know?
Yep, but you have this energy that shows itself that kind of allows you to do things that you normally couldn't do. You become a Superman.
Yeah.
So I've been looking at spaces up in Palm Beach Gardens area to open a new facility. And, you know, I get that same kind of excitement. But the A spaces now have gone, they're through the roof. I mean, they're like $52 a square foot. I've never seen that in my life. And they're getting it because they get a lot of these national companies and these franchises. So that's my challenge. And just last week, a bank went out of business. Now, I don't know how banks go out of business, but a bank went out of business. So there's a bank, 2,800 square feet. I don't know if I can make that work as a biohacking center, but in my mind, I'm creating all kinds of different scenarios to use the kind of setup of the bank. So I like this stage, and I feel like it's really good timing to do something bold and bigger and different because the world just shook and things changed. And the opportunity, as I say every time we speak, is right in front of us. So, you know, Tasso, you're capitalizing on it. Troy, you sound like you're in a really good place. Anyone else have anything they want to share?
I'm in a process of the hard launch for the 50-plus Fit Club online. Super excited about it.
Good. What does a hard launch look like?
Hard launch will be, I just finished the Inflammation Rescue mini course. So I'll be encouraging people to go take the mini course and then looking to have a big group do the 14-day miracle in the beginning of the year. And then it will be all of the other promotional stuff, like I'm going back to doing like, you know, regular Monday motivation and all that stuff will be leading people there to capture their information by saying, when you give me the information, we'll give you the mini course, and then just making people aware and saying, you know, we're going to be starting this whole year off big by doing the 14-day miracle, be part of that.
Who is your target other than over 50? Is there anything more specific, or it's just people over 50?
Perimenopausal women.
And is it mostly women? Is that your target? I'm sure you'll accept men if they come in, but is that who you're going after? Is the language of perimenopausal women?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's being geared more towards that. But all of the testimonials are which are videos, are women telling their stories and how
good.
Successful they were with the program and how they couldn't lose weight and they found this process and how, you know, these are women that they've done 7-day sprints and then the 14-day miracle and now they're all in the coaching program too. So I really did a good job by capturing their stories. So when they go to that site, there's I think 6 videos of the women just telling their story. So, you know, that's what I'm super excited about. So I'm really looking forward to women going there and saying, okay, that's me. And, you know, this is something I want to be a part of.
Good.
And then
Tammy, are you here? Tony, it sounds great. Really, it sounds great. I followed you through the development of this and the mindset shifts and the ups and the downs and the COVID, and it seems to be you landed in a really good place. So that's great.
Yeah.
Is Tammy here?
Good job. Very interesting.
Yeah, and you've monetized it, like, significantly, right?
Kajabi's been very good for me. It's completely worth going. And when you first hear about it, everyone says, "Well, it's too expensive," and it really isn't.
No,
it's cheap.
It's been a great investment for the right person. You have to know how to monetize it, and you figured out, you know, your course materials and how to put it together. But you know, people sometimes think they're going to spend money and they're just going to have money come in. You've got to build a structure, but I think Kajabi is a great, great, great platform. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I use it. Is Tammy here? Is Heather here? Is Gary here? Well, there are 3 other people here.
Yes, I am here.
What's going on with you, my friend?
You know, just working.
Okay.
Work. And basically trying to figure out when I'm going to try to do that thing I was telling you about, but I never did it, you know, a couple weeks ago we were talking about.
Which thing?
Like trying to put your survey thing on the Google.
Yeah.
And trying that. I haven't gotten around to it yet. But
yeah, I don't want to spend any time on it today because I have on previous calls, but this REMAST quiz, for me, has been incredible. We use it now when people come into the club. We put it up on the screen and we just do it live. Because it gives me so much leverage. Because it takes away the discussion with them trying to say things to cover up their ego. Like, they just answer. They choose A, B, C, or D. So then when we get a total, if it's a low total, we go, well, you're moving away from health, and if you keep going in that direction, it gets ugly, but you're here where we can fix it really easily. Let's get you on a 21-day reboot. And if they're far along, then we say, there's nothing else that's helped you. Like, you have to do this. What else will you possibly try? So it's been great. So, Gary, when you're ready, just, you know, text me privately, and we'll figure out the best way to coordinate on it. But I think it's a good pursuit.
Yeah, I definitely want to do it. So I will do that. I just haven't figured out the exact date that I'm going to start it.
So I have had continued challenge with finding good employees or even finding good raw material for employees. And I've shared some of it with you in the past, but it would really be a reality show. Like, I should have somebody just videotape all of the interviews because you wouldn't believe it. You really wouldn't believe it. I mean, a guy came in the other day with a guitar and nice guy. He was wearing a tie. And he came in and he said he used to drive a truck, but now he's going to be a doctor and he's getting engaged and he's going to get married, but his girlfriend doesn't know yet that she's engaged. It was like a really all over the place crazy conversation. And I just thought, I should be videotaping this because I can't even relay it. But at a certain point, I go, why'd you bring your guitar? And he goes, I thought I'd play you guys a song. All right. So he takes a guitar and he strums it. And it was so out of tune. Tony, you know what an out of tune guitar sounds like if you ever haven't picked it up in a while. And he starts playing some kind of reggae love song that he wrote. And it was so awful. I go, listen, I think his name was Jim. Do you realize your guitar's out of tune? He goes, yeah, but I don't have a tuner. I go, well, tune it. He goes, oh, I don't have a tuner. I go, well, I'll tune it. He goes, you can't tune it without a tuner. I go, of course you can. Give me the guitar. So I tuned the guitar, and he was shocked. He, like, never knew it was possible to tune a guitar without a tuner. What did we do before we had guitar tuners? Imagine that. We had to actually listen, turn a little knob. And then he played his song, and it was nice. It was a nice little song, and he left. And I immediately got on the phone and called the University of Miami, and I spoke to the head of kinesiology, and I said, I got to find a direct line to your students because I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to have these interviews anymore. I want people who come in who at least have a baseline understanding. And I'm thinking college students who choose to study in the field of kinesiology, among other things, including pre-med, who can have a career without going to medical school. So I'm actually now doing a talk for their graduating class of this year, the pre-med students through the kinesiology department. And I'm actually excited about it. I think I tapped into something. This was interesting to me. 49% of the students who go through pre-med do not go on, they graduate, do not go on to graduate school, 49%. So these are people who studied enough to get through college, and not easy. You know, they had to take chemistry, and they had to take calculus, and they had to learn quite a bit of biology, and in this case, kinesiology. So that's where my focus is now, and I'm going to go to all the local universities and try to form those relationships. Because as you guys, I raised the bar in what we do. You know, it's not just, hey, come here, here's our leg section, here's our back section. As Tasso has just evolved out of that, we're helping people really do what medicine is not helping them do. And in trying to find people from ads that have that raw material, it's really, it's near impossible. I have a couple of decent ones now, I do, but it's not what I'm looking for. So that's the market I'm looking at. But I found that interesting, that almost half of the students who study pre-med graduate, do not go on to graduate school. So where will they earn money? And that's why I think this is perfect timing. Because if you come out with at least a pre-med background, and then you go into personal training, not because you're going to work in LA Fitness, but because you're going to help people in a way that medical field cannot, great. So I don't have any outcome other than I'm forming those relationships right now. But I have a sense that that may be the future. For us to anybody looking to hire, it might create a really good hiring pool. But if you guys think you have new competition coming into this field, you don't. I mean, it's really crazy what is out there. I could do a whole call just making you laugh, telling you about the interviews, but that would be to no point other than to amuse you. But I'm as bad as you think it is worse, and they're serious. If I showed you the applications that come in, and there's a process like on Indeed, I spell out the job and I say, do not send a resume. If you send a resume, you will not be considered. Instead, go to this link. Over 90% send resumes. Now, then they go to the link and there's probably 8 questions. And the questions are normal interview questions. You know, what makes you feel like this would be a good job for you? It's hard to believe that these people take the time to do it. I feel like calling them going, do you realize you're looking for a job? Like one of them recently said, you ask too many questions. On the 4th question, you ask too many questions. Scary to me. So where did this come from? And I question this all the time. Is it an entire generation? You know, when we look at millennials, there are wonderful, amazing things about millennials who are successful, honestly. There's a different level of genius that hasn't shown up before. But I'm going to guess those are the 2 percenters. And then the other 98% want to be the 2%, and they seem to delude themselves into thinking they are, but they really don't have a skill set, and they've lost, or they've never gained the insight into human communication without their phone. So I wonder, is it the whole generation, or is it South Florida, or is it the fitness industry, or is it a combination? But really, it's ugly out there. Anybody else have any experience with that or not?
I tried to teach a class.
Go ahead, Tasso.
I tried to teach a class at Kaiser one time and then bring their interns in. And I'm telling you, I went back. They barred me from talking anymore because I went back to the dean at that program for personal trainers and that. I said, these are the fucking worst people I've ever had come through my program as potential employees. It's like, and he finally admitted after I talked about it, he finally admitted that they're just there getting people approved for an education so they can take the governmental money that would support them.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to name what certification agencies, this is plural, acknowledge this to me, but I've been on the phone with quite a few of them. People I know and people have been in the industry a long time, and more than one, acknowledge that it became a game of selling certifications, especially during COVID. Like, just come out with more certifications and put a price tag on them. Really has very little to do with competence. I remember my first certification. This is after a college degree, but my first certification was ACE, and I took it at NYU. And it was a huge room, and they had proctors who, like, walked around, and, you know, it was like that nervous feeling of taking a test. So, you know, it seemed like real and serious. And then I went on to the NSCA, and they had a practical test. Now you take it online. There's nothing to prevent you from doing it with the website open right in front of you. So, yeah, that's the another end of it is in our industry, the bar is set so ridiculously low. Also, like, I have people come in, they have certifications from NASM, from ISSA, but they don't have the foundational one. Like, these are extras. So they don't even get a basic personal trainer certification. So, yeah, Tasso, I understand. The fucking worst group of trainers. Is that what you said? Am I quoting you? The fucking worst? Did I lose you? Did he say that, guys, or did I just offend him by using the F word?
No, that's what he said.
Okay, good. Who else was starting to speak when Tasso was?
I was just saying.
All right, so Troy first.
I just, you know, I've had trouble hiring people forever. But, it's insane how bad they are and how, I experienced no guitar, but I experienced very similar stuff to what you talk about often, yes.
Yeah, and stay with it if you want. You'll get a guitar sooner or later. It's inevitable. Tony, what were you going to say?
Well, I used to teach at WITS.
Yeah.
And that was one of the challenges. I taught for WITS for 12 years, and it got progressively worse. Now, and one of the things that they did, which was great in my opinion, was they required people to go to the class, and they required people to go at the local, you know, college. And their local university. One was at Wagner College, one was at the College of Staten Island. So they're putting you in this scholastic environment, and you figure you get the best people. And I would be frustrated beyond belief because it was difficult to have to tell these people that in order for you to take a written test, because it was written and practical, that you had to study. And I'm trying to think, like, why it's adult education, it's continuing education. Like, why am I doing this? Why am I saying, like, you know, trying to convince people that they have to study.
So it's not just South Florida, you're saying?
It must be South Florida and Staten Island.
And
no,
Battle Creek. And that's the big triangle in everything, right? South Florida, Staten Island, Battle Creek. That's where everything happens.
Let's go with that.
Yeah, so, you know, listen, with everything like this, it frustrates me, and then I also stop myself, and I go, okay, more opportunity for us, right? So when I look at, just when I look over my own shoulder, and I go, you know, where are the things that I've done in my career that really seem to work and flow and didn't take a lot of effort? all of them took effort to get to a certain point. And then when I get to the certain point, the best way I can describe it is I develop a rhythm. And, you know, Tony, it's kind of what you went through in first thinking of developing a group and figuring out how to do online training and going through the frustration of I can't open my facility, but I think I'm kind of liking this online stuff, to finding Kajabi, to doing a course, doing the inflammation talk. Like, you weren't in a rhythm yet. But at a certain point, you pull the pieces together and you develop a rhythm, and that's when it starts to work. Is that accurate?
That is correct.
And I think within the rhythm, we develop rituals. So you just said, I'm going to start doing my Monday motivation again. So when things get in that flow of feeling effortless, it's because all the work that we've done prior leads to this sense of a rhythm and rituals. And I believe that is the key to making marketing effortless, to making growing your business, marketing your business, and operating your business all equal. Because it's just what you do. So whenever something changes, an industry changes, a competitor shows up, you get thrown. You get thrown out of your rhythm, and you have to find new rituals. And I think that's the nature of any entrepreneur, is you may go through 2 great years, and then you go through disruption, or 5 great years, and then you go through disruption. And I will say, we've all gone through major disruption. So I see this as a really good starting point to develop a new rhythm and develop some new rituals. So how do you do that? Well, I think you've got to move your ego away and say, I'm starting equal to everyone else. Now, you'll bring all your stuff back because you have resources that other people don't have. You have knowledge that other people don't have. But just from a rediscovering your rhythm, you've got to not hold on to the things you did in the past. And you have to first decide or refine what you are. Now, when I speak to personal trainers who are surviving and it is their career, if I ask them what they are, they say a personal trainer. And I don't think there's any shame in that title, although for many years I struggled with what do I call myself, what do I call my team. I know lots of really good personal trainers. They're just not in the hiring pool. So you have to decide what you are. Now, that doesn't mean there's going to be a title for it. And when I came up with, like, health catalyst, it's a good word, but it's not a title that people recognize. When I say healer, it's a good word. It defines me, but it's not something I'd put on a business card. So I'm not saying you have to come up with your title. I'm just saying you have to come up with your own sense of what you are. Then you have to decide who is your ICA. And I know some of you hate that because you go, I just find people or people just find me. But if you really want to get into a new rhythm and a new set of rituals that make things feel effortless, you've got to identify who is going to be most responsive to your marketing. So Tony just said perimenopausal women. But then he went on to say, I have 5 or 6 video testimonials of women who fall into that category, which is great. He's targeting his ICA. So if 25-year-old guys who want to put on muscle size went and saw those testimonials, they're not likely to buy in. So he's structured his entire marketing and operation around the ICA. So I know that's hard for you guys sometimes because you tend to think that you're limiting yourself. Like if somebody's told, oh, you have to target perimenopausal women, you go, no, but I could train men and I could train teens. I could train athletes. Of course you can. None of this is taking you away from that. But if you can get into a rhythm where you're hitting an ICA with marketing that works, then it just starts to roll. So I think it's important for everybody to be able to do that, to take a step back and just ask the question, even if you've done it before, what am I and who is my ICA? And I've been telling you for months, if not years, you're limited if you decide that you're a fitness company and your ICA is someone who wants to improve their own fitness. That weakens you. That doesn't mean it's bad. It's just nothing in terms of standing out. So I've done a lot of things in the last couple of weeks in sort of following this line of thinking. And I spoke to an economist, which was an interesting discussion. Tuesday of this week, I set the appointment about a month ago because I really wanted somebody else, somebody who studies this, to give me a true perspective of what the economy is going to do and how it's going to relate to the fields of medicine and fitness. Because I see this incredibly opportune market being disappointed by medicine. So some of what I ask is it better for me to partner with medicine or go up against it? And when I say go up against it, I don't mean blatantly, but I mean pick up the people who have been disappointed by the medical field. So I thought talking to an economist would give me a sense of where the money lies going into the future. And we started talking, and we mostly spoke about timing this time versus other times in history, how this is a unique time. We've never been in this before. We throw around comparisons. We talk about the Great Depression. We talk about the recession. But the truth is this is really a unique time. And this is the first time ever that something like cryptocurrency shows up that can remove power from banks and power mongers. Now, I'm not really in that world, but it was interesting for me to hear that perspective. Like, up until now, whoever controlled the economy controlled the economy. And with cryptocurrency, there's now an opportunity to, in a sense, overthrow the standard systems. So that's why this is truly unprecedented. Now, that's also a little scary. I mean, if you think about it, one day the banks may just go away, and what happens to your money, and is your money even real because it's no longer backed by gold? But then I stop myself from thinking that way because that's not what I'm looking for, and I don't want to get in that worry loop. But it was interesting. Cryptocurrency is now able to exist, and people can buy things with cryptocurrency credit cards, and it's not only Bitcoin, that render the banks insignificant. He talked about how a virtual shopping economy, which right now is Amazon, can remove any power from any retailers. Now, are there companies that can challenge Amazon? Not immediately. But there are certainly companies that are claiming a niche, such as Chewy with pet supplies. So everybody's not looking at how can I make my store more attractive than buying things online. Now people are looking at how can I capture the market share virtually. And that too, it's kind of a scary thought. It's major disruption. If we were in the business of selling dumbbells or bands and balls and we had a store, we'd be in jeopardy because people can buy them online immediately. But we're not in that business. So far I'm listening and I'm able to kind of get a sense of, wow, this is disruptive and wow, this is crazy. But then I also go, okay, but still I'm secure. None of this threatens me, at least not in my career. There could be a virtual shopping economy, and I'm still going to have people, at least right now, who want to reverse chronic disease and need a reboot or something like it. We talked about how consumer appetites can be satisfied in the short term and primed in the long term by social media. How social media can give you impulse that makes you want to buy something, and you buy the thing immediately. And in the moment, you feel satisfied. But now that you are targeted by that social media, they keep sending you more and more things, and you're never satisfied because you want more and you want more and you want more because they've retargeted you. They now know that whatever it is that you bought, it's almost like your fetish. So you start seeing those ads in your feed again and again and again. A little scary to me. So I would say at a certain point in the conversation, I started to feel that the future, at least economically, at best, is tentative. Like, what I hoped is he would say, here's what's going to happen in this field, and here's what's going to happen in this demographic. But it wasn't. I mean, everything he said was interesting and mind-blowing, but all of it made it seem tentative. Like, we don't know what's going to happen with retail. It may not exist anymore. We don't know what's going to happen with banks. They may not exist anymore. And this is real. But then I turned it around. I said, listen, all of this is really interesting to me. And I'd like to do a podcast or a radio show or a webinar or something. But for now, I just really wanted to know what you see in terms of shifts in my field, in the field of medicine and fitness. And he said, I have to be honest with you, it isn't my area of concern. It's smaller than I like to focus right now. However, the U.S. market is not likely to return to the sudden upheavals that we had during the COVID shutdown, during the lockdown. It's not going to go back to that. Like, don't worry about that, he said. You know, a lot of people are worried about that. But don't. Like, we went through that. We came out the other side. Our entire population of consumers and business owners realized that that was probably a massive mistake. We can politicize it or not, but it certainly did more harm than good in the long run. Locking down was not the solution. So we're not going back there. Like, don't worry about going back there. But also, nothing's going to be the same as it was before that. So here's what he said. The future trajectory of COVID is going to be the great predictor. Everything is a guess, and while it's not going to go back to lockdown, consumer behaviors are going to be reliant on the future trajectory of COVID. Now, what do you guys think about that? Like, does this scare you at all? Does it kind of shake you up? Does it make you feel like we're in a different kind of world? Or is just none of it really matter?
It definitely matters because, as you said, things are just not going to be the same any longer. And it's interesting how we would have political disruption, COVID, and cryptocurrency all surfacing and being prominent and ubiquitous all at the same time. It's a massive paradigm shift, and you saw people that got, like, really comfortable in this new space, or they found themselves in a position where they said, I have to be comfortable in this new space, and then moving forward. And then you have, you know, like, you know, children like your daughter's age or my son's age where this is normal for them, and they're going to be moving forward with adults with this behind them as being something that they normally do. I don't think that it's, like you said, it's not going to be the same. It won't ever shift back to the way it was before.
What do you think, Tony, about what I said about, like, retail and banks? I mean, is that something that you just kind of go, well, that's out of my control, just let it happen the way it does? Or do you kind of feel that little bit of a twinge of, this is really tentative, we're all on shaky ground?
Yeah, I mean, even if you talk about what's going on in our industry, things like Tempo, Mira, Tonal, and, you know, these are things that are automating the whole process of what people think of, you know, personal training to be. I really think that this is not a stretch. So in the next, like, 5 years or so, we're going to see things that we thought were never going to happen to just be complete normalcy.
Like what? What are you referring to?
Well, when I talk about the Mira and Tempo and Tonal, these are just apparatuses that you can put on your wall, and they give you resistance, and they have these automated virtual trainers, and they're going to, the Peloton showed that it's viable. And now you see a whole bunch of other companies that are jumping into that new business.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting about that? I have a friend who bought the Tonal thing. Beginning of COVID, and You know what he's doing now?
What's that?
He joins the gym. He joined the gym, and he when he works out at home with dumbbells.
Yeah, and I don't doubt that because there are going to be some people who are going to look at it and say this thing sucks, but there are all going to be some people who are going to look at it and say, you know what, I like this.
Yeah, but that's Phil, true with Peloton, the Peloton.
Phil, do you remember?
Yeah.
Do you remember the Do you remember the research that Augie Nieto did back in the early 90s? Because people, he was trying to market a health the health clubs to sell their life cycles, and their research showed that people who invest and have home gyms were 70% higher qualified members for health clubs. And if they only bought a bike, they were 48% more likely to join a health club because they were so attuned to their fitness, they wanted to have the opportunity that when they missed their workout, they could do it at home.
Yeah, so when I do remember, and when I look at, I'll say, our industry, I do see trends, and it's kind of mirroring past trends, like this has happened before. So, yes, the equipment companies were moving to get people to buy things at home, and if they were going to market this to the fitness field, they had to do so without alienating health clubs, which is why research like that comes in handy, because we're going, well, when they buy the life cycle, they're not now not going to come to the gym. They're actually more likely to come to the gym. So, you know, I see that thinking. But if we also think of way back, and we think of Soloflex, that was really the first kind of home equipment that had massive market appeal. And it was a terrible piece of equipment in the long run. Like, it just didn't move right, and you use those bands, and maybe for somebody who's super deconditioned, they can improve it. But they had this amazing model, and he didn't get his body from Soloflex. But that became really popular, and then if you would talk to people 2 years later, they would all say the same thing. I use it to keep my clothes on, right? It's my laundry hamper. It's like where I take my clothes off, and I throw them on the bench, and the same is true with a treadmill. But to the point that Augie made, there's an indication that they're willing to invest in their own health. Well, now I think the appeal of these products, and there are more than just the three you mentioned, it's a very wide and fast-growing market, is you don't have to be around other people. But now, to Gary's point, people want to be around other people. So I don't know if the home equipment piece will ever truly be the solution that they sell it as. And I can tell you a lot of stories from when I was contracted with Fitness Quest, Time Warner, about some of their skewed research and the equipment they put out and Tony Little and all the misrepresentation on the infomercials. So it's just the way the trend has gone. And this is just the latest one. And now that we can include virtual and we can have virtual personal training, if we maintain our professional status and we are different than just personal trainers, I don't think any of that can touch what we do. I don't. I think, again, going back to what Tasso said, that if people buy those things, they will be disappointed, but it also indicates they are potential customers because they're willing to spend money on themselves. But still, we've got to look at what I just mentioned, and we've got to say people's hunger, their appetite is being affected by that. So when somebody buys Tonal or something like it, they wind up in the Facebook feed for every other company that buys that list. So it becomes a bit of a closed circle where that didn't work, so now buy this. That didn't work, so now buy this. That didn't work, so now buy this. So we've got to figure out how to speak to people and say what we've always said. If all the shit you tried didn't work, come to us. Like, if you want to keep buying stuff for your home, great. You know, you'll be able to throw a lot of clothing on it. But if you're not getting the result you want, what makes you think the next thing you're going to buy is going to work? I don't know if that carries forward to the health clubs. I do think the health club industry is going to suffer. I do. But that's why we can't be personal trainers and we can't be mainstream health clubs. I think Tasso and Tony, what they're planning moving forward, it's good positioning. They're choosing a market. You know, Tasso says, we're going to help you reverse chronic disease. That's a unique market. You can't buy that online. You can't. You can't buy a piece of equipment that does that. So even when we look at all of the gloom and doom that can come out of what I just shared with you, I could position this in a way that I feel comfortable, that we're in a good space, that we can do something that everyone can't. And when I look at the world around me, and I said this on the last call, and I think you guys agreed, it seems to me that worry over COVID is reduced, but it still exists. I think, you know, I still see masks in Publix, but people aren't as worried. They're not as scared. They're not all running and getting tested all the time. While panic may be replaced by acceptance at some level, in other words, they're not like, oh, my God, I got to go to the grocery store. They're like, I got to go to the grocery store, but I'll wear my mask and I'll keep my distance from people. We remain on this sort of this teetering board where we don't know what might happen. And I will say, while the anger may have lessened, the underlying hostility and polarization are still there. Like, you can trigger people pretty easily if you try. And there's a lot out there to support that triggering. I just read Robert Kennedy's book called The Real Anthony Fauci. I'm not recommending it or not recommending it. It's just interesting. It's just interesting how, you know, some people can believe somebody to be a hero and others can just see that same exact person as a villain. If you remember me telling you when I sent that email out, and I got emails back going, yo, bro, I'm with you. Fuck Biden. And then another email said, you're killing everybody. How can you mention ivermectin? And why don't you get vaccinated? That exists. That still exists. So a fair assessment says we are in a tentative place. And let's be aware of all of the pitfalls, potentially, that I just mentioned. And let's find some value in reflecting on what I just shared with you that came out of this conversation with The Economist.
And Phil, let's not forget the two things that I believe will never be trumped by the technology you buy for their home. There is the personal interaction and personal relationship that we develop with them of trust and that power flow, as you've taught us. But the second thing is results. They'll tell you we'll guarantee it for 60, 90 days, whatever. But everybody knows that no one returns those things. So when we have the integrity to say, well, you know, we're not getting results, we aren't working together, here's your money back, people freak out because they've never had that type of integrity. You know, when we're here, I've met my members, I've said, hey, listen, our bookkeeper is working on your refund because we're not going to be able to honor your year membership. They're, like, astonished. They go, like, oh my God, you know, I mean, I don't have to come after you to get it or anything like that, you know, because some came to us because Gold's Gym tried to charge them during the closures. So when we have that integrity, that relationship and results, those three things trump anything else that can be put out by technology or anything else, at this point at least.
Yes. And that is absolutely true as long as we really have a quality of product and an ability to deliver. And that's what gives us the strength. In other words, what you just described cannot be true for everybody. You've got to be a practitioner who is really confident in what you promise, and you've got to live up to your promises. And if you fall short and you give somebody their money back, that's noble because you fell short. And I don't think that most people in our field think that way, right?
No, they don't. I think the guys on this call, for the most part, think that way.
Yeah.
But I don't think our industry thinks that way.
No, and I think it's important to know that while you may say these things will never be trumped, COVID did affect everyone. And while some companies, like you mentioned, Peloton, were in a position to prosper, most companies suffered. Many companies, including, and I shared with you some of the numbers, but including the medical field, they counted on government money. They acknowledged they would not be in business if they didn't get their PPP. That's medical businesses. Or if they weren't relying on government money or they weren't in a position to prosper, they had to dance as we did. You know, we had to change things up. I mean, I would say my greatest insights came from the focus groups I did during the lockdown because I needed to understand how people are thinking. So, you know, those of us who made it through, we danced a little bit and we figured it out and we took some steps. So my suggestion is we move forward with a sense of awareness that the world can change in a moment. We've seen it happen. And not just our neighborhood. I mean, literally, the world changed in a moment. And our sense of the control that we have over our own economy may be diminished by a public willing to shelter or mask or hide upon some agency with an air of authority telling them to do so. Whether or not that's right or wrong doesn't matter right now. As business owners, we have to acknowledge that that happened. That can happen again. So it's unstable. So as I looked into this further, I found a survey conducted by Deloitte, and it said 51% of customers are concerned about their physical well-being when it comes to their activities. 51% of customers. This means consumers who go to places to shop, to play, to exercise. 51% are concerned about their physical well-being when it comes to their activities. Now, this is the part that gets to me. It is up from 47% a month prior, and these are 2021 numbers. So that means that even though the panic has diminished, the deep-lying apprehension is growing. They're concerned about their physical well-being. I love this. I do. I love this, but we've got to play it right because they're not as likely to go to a gym as they were before. And many people are more likely to go to a gym if they still have some sanitary, they wipe things down. Even though the panic is gone, the apprehension seems to be growing. Now, just to give you some kind of reference point for this, according to the Deloitte study, this wasn't even a factor on anyone's radar prior to March of 2020. March of 2020, 0% of customers were concerned about their physical well-being when it came to the activities. So from 0% to 50% is a big jump. So if we can see our clients as consumers, and not only consumers, but consumers in need, and if we can recognize that these consumers in need have a fear, it may be deep lying, but there's always that tipping point. It's always just a blip away. Then we have to be able to address at some level the source of their fears. And that, Tasso, is the power. When we can speak to the source of their fears. So, Tasso, say again what you're going to reposition as. Where you spoke about reversing chronic disease. Can you remember? Just say it again, however you said earlier.
We reverse chronic disease and give life back to you.
Okay. So now chronic disease.
The energy of life back to you.
Beautiful. Chronic disease, just the term, had a very different meaning or a very different impact on people's fear in 2019 than it does now. Do you agree?
Yes. Because now they're called comorbidities.
Right. Right. Nobody ever heard of a comorbidity before. And anything with the word morbid in it is not good, right? So suddenly, all these people who just thought, I need to go to the doctor and get my pills changed, are now in fear for their lives. So if we can target that audience with this message, we're really saying, we will keep you alive. Listen, vaccines don't cure COVID. I'll make that statement very boldly. Vaccines do not cure COVID. So, as I said at the beginning of COVID, there are three choices. You can get COVID and die, you can get COVID and recover, or you cannot get COVID. Those are the only three options. If you're thinking the answer is a vaccine that does not cure COVID and does not even prevent COVID, we now know, isn't it better to go what we absolutely know can protect you, your own immune system? So when we're talking about reversing chronic disease, we're talking about getting rid of those comorbidities so you stop fearing it. Doesn't mean you become reckless. You still live the way you want to live. You wear a mask if you want to wear a mask. But, man, you got to do something to get yourself back into a state of health where your immune system works. I am really continually blown away by when I do intakes with people and they tell me they're on immunosuppressants. I can't believe how many people are on immunosuppressants. The other day a guy came in and, you know, we talked about any physical limitations and he goes, my hands. And I said, well, what's the matter with your hands? And he showed them to me and they were sort of dry. And I said, is it psoriasis? Or he goes, no, it's an autoimmune disease, but my doctor put me on an immunosuppressant. And I said, did it help? And he goes, oh, not yet, but I'm hoping it does. So really what his doctor did is make him more vulnerable to COVID. I mean, that's the truth. And any disease and any bacteria. Why the fuck would we suppress the immune system for a guy with dry hands? But these are becoming commonplace. Humira is becoming one of the most advertised drugs. They have a massive marketing budget that they invest on the show 60 Minutes. So when people see this, they go, oh, yeah, this will cure my dry hands. This will cure my eczema. What? In a world where people fear COVID, you're shutting down your immune system? So this is why I'm saying we have a power if we can speak to people's fears. Now, here's something else interesting. As I'm talking to this guy, I'm explaining negative ions. And I was giving the example, and I said, so anywhere water hits water in nature, negative ions are released. So if you go to the beach, the waves, whether they're small or big, water hitting water creates these negatively charged ions that become antioxidants and help you to offset oxidation. Or if you're at a waterfall or a rainforest, and he goes, wait a minute. He goes, I spent a month in Hawaii and my hands were fine. I said, did you go to the beach? Yes. Did you go to a waterfall? Yes. Did you go to rainforest? Yes. And now you're taking an immunosuppressant and you have the problem? So they don't have this awareness. And this is our greatest opportunity, is to help them understand, yes, we can reverse chronic disease, but we can reduce their risk of getting sick from anything. We can't guarantee they'll never get sick. Nobody can. But, man, we're the best option far and away if we speak to that market. If we're willing to speak to the source of their fears and offer solutions. And, guys, if you want to write anything down, write that down. Because in terms of influence, that's the most powerful advice I can give you right now. Speak to the source of their fears and offer solutions. You've got to be the best option. And you will absolutely be the best option if you can speak to the source of their fears and offer solutions. Now, since I spoke to this economist, I started researching. I wanted to find out more. I have a friend who's a business consultant for a very long time. And I called him up and I shared what I heard from the economist and he agreed. But he told me that in his world, the most prominent trend that he sees among business entrepreneurs today is trend hunting. So what business owners do is they watch the marketplace and they look for a trend. And they go, wait a minute, everybody's buying this piece of home exercise equipment where they sit on a bike as they would in a gym, but we can charge a lot for the bike because they'll feel like they're in a spinning class if we can put an instructor in front of them. And we can develop camaraderie and a feeling of familiarity if we have the names, the first names of the instructors. So Peloton takes off. So then somebody else goes, I know, I'll create something that looks like a mirror where we'll deliver the personal trainer. And then somebody else goes, no, I'll put some on the wall where they can use their phone or their computer. These are trend watchers seeing the trend and jumping on the bandwagon. And it leads to a lot of innovation. But what he said to me is, the few who are doing well are the ones who are really good at trend hunting. Everyone else waits for the trends to appear before responding to them. And those people lose. They jump in the water too late. So it's kind of like somebody innovates, the trend hunters jump right in and follow, and they do well, and then all the imitators attempt to follow, but they're too late, and it falls apart, and the market becomes saturated. The strength, I suggested to him, and he agreed, lies in predicting the trends, in anticipating the trends and being ready. And I don't know if it was an accident of fate that I was positioned well for this, because I was talking to people about immunity and warning them about cytokines and inflammation, all of this before COVID hit. But it gave me a level of expertise and experience through this entire pandemic that allows me to reflect and go, I was ready for this. I wasn't ready for every element of it, but I didn't have to completely reinvent myself because I was in the process of doing it anyway. And I think everybody here is united in that regard. The marketplace is reactive, probably more reactive than ever before. And it's reactive to what it hears from the news and from social media. And if the market hears new variant, or cases are starting to spike, or hospitalizations are up, then some people will be more hesitant to travel or to do business in person or to have one-on-ones face-to-face. So this is why it's important that we anticipate. But also, we've got to watch the key indicators. Because if we know that, as soon as we hear cases are starting to spike, we've got to speak to our marketplace. We can't wait for the reaction and then go, now what do we do? And we need to have some kind of plan B. So when the unexpected happens, we're ready. So I would say we have to respect COVID as a catalyst. It was a tremendous catalyst. It was not only a disruptor, but it changed almost everything. So everything that I just shared with you, from business consultant Bill, from Ron, the economist, is all the result of COVID. So if we know that, let's keep an eye on it. Let's keep our ear to the ground and listen. We hear cases are spiking. Let's address it. Let's have answers. Let's have solutions. Let's speak to people's fears. Let's not pretend it went away. Let's tell people, hey, this can come back and happen at any time. If it's not COVID-19, it'll be COVID something else. But regardless, you wanted to carry your immune system. Why would you want to live your life, as short as it may be, with comorbidities if you can reverse them? Why would you want to ever take a medication that suppresses the one system that can fight off disease? The answer is they don't. They just got bad advice. So in that opportunity, you present yourself as the solution. Now, can we do things virtually? Yeah. I mean, it's what Tony's building his new launch upon. I mean, you guys know I've been doing virtual things now for years. During the lockdown, biohackers had online classes, our group exercise classes. We would get 5,000 people from around the world viewing our group X classes. Now, none of it turned into revenue, but we weren't trying at that time. But just think about, if we could get 5,000 viewers without doing any marketing, what if we decided to try to monetize that? And I'm not right now, but I'm saying that could be a plan B. We drove over 5,000 people into the 55 days program. So it's okay for us to have a virtual plan B, but I don't think we should direct all our energies toward being virtual. I think it's important that we still meet with people, sit with people, you know, get real world results. Tony, if the people who went through your programs online got great results online, you still want the pictures of people standing next to you. You still want the stories of people who came to your studio. I think moving forward, everyone has to get good at focusing on affordability. but not price. And the way we do that is by learning to direct prospects and clients to see the cost of the alternative. When people go, it's too expensive, we've got to help them see what it will cost them to not get the result we promise. Tasso's going to be selling personal training once a week for $189. To me, that's an amazing deal if, and this is a big if I believe that the trainer will be the vehicle to getting me where I want to get to. If I don't believe the trainer will get me there, then it's expensive. But if I believe it, if I have comorbidities and I believe this will stop me from fearing death, man, what a great deal. So we've got to recognize the sensitivity people have to cost, but that doesn't mean we go cheap. Matter of fact, let me share some reference numbers. The average cost of a physical therapy self-pay in 2021 was $70 to $100. Now, self-pay is important because when insurance pays it, the billing is about $185. So when you go to a physical therapy clinic, they will look at whether or not you have insurance. And if you have insurance, they'll bill you $195 per session, and your insurance will pay a fraction of it. And if you go, I don't have insurance, they go, okay, we're going to give you a discount. But it's not really a discount because that's what they're getting paid from the insurance company. They're billing $195 to get $70. So the average cost of a physical therapy self-pay in 2021 is $70 to $100. The average cost of a health coaching session in 2021, and by the way, as far as the legal system, there is no such thing as a health coach. I know that there are four entities that claim to have a health coach certification, and they can give you all of this third-party credential, and they can tell you why it's recognized. The fact is there is no case law to support it. The average cost of a health coaching session in 2021 is $50 to $75. When I tell you the average cost, and when I say cost, I mean what people are actually paying. When I tell you the average cost of a personal training session, do you think it will be higher or lower than physical therapy and health coaching? If physical therapy is $70 to $100, health coaching is $50 to $75, what do you think the average cost of personal training would be?
Between $35 and $50.
Yeah, pretty close. Between $40 and $75. So I'm saying to you guys, let's look at those numbers and realize how very different we are than those people. And I think while you find your position and you find your ICA, find and solidify your pricing above the average, ideally far above the average. So this is why it's really important that you learn not to try to negotiate by making things cheaper, that you try to influence by helping people see the cost of not doing it. Why should you pay Tasso $6,500 to go through this disease reversal program in his new club? Parentheses, planting a seed, close parentheses. Because you will live the next 25 years of your life disease-free. Because you will not suffer the pain you've had for the last 20 years. Because you will not fear disease or a pandemic. So now when we compare the cost of not doing it, $6,500 seems like a bargain. To everybody? No, but he just said he's in the proximity of a company where the average employee earns $200,000 a year. Is it worth $6,500 to them? So let's not get cringe. Let's not get into a cringe position when we're presenting prices. Let's state our prices boldly, acknowledge that, yes, they're much higher than the average, but we do something so far above average, and let's weigh out the cost of you not doing this thing with the investment you're about to make. I am suggesting that when you identify your ICA, you assess your marketplace. You look at the clients that you have who are that ICA. And you look at the prospects who do not become clients. And you identify the two most common objections. In other words, you have your pitch. Some of you call it your discovery session. You have your initial meeting. You have your consultation. And some people become clients and some don't. So when they don't, there's usually an objection. You know, Troy just had an experience where the rejection was probably irrational, yet it was an objection, but it's not. That's not common. So what are the common objections that you hear? Does anybody know just off the top of their head, what are the most common reasons that people give you for not saying yes?
Sure. Let me speak to my wife. Let me speak to my husband.
Well, that's a procrastination, yes. And we could work on overcoming objections, but what about an actual objection? Like a no, this is not for me because.
Time and money.
Say it again.
Time and money.
Time and money. So if you recognize that these are the most common objections, then I suggest that if you're going to focus on an ICA, you spend a lot of time figuring out how to overcome them. Because, again, if we're really talking to people about making them not only better, not only healthier, but kind of immune to the fear of death, and I'm not kidding. Like, this is what is causing this reaction. It's the fear of death. I have high blood pressure, and I have diabetes, and now the cases are going up. I got to wear my mask and stay in my house. Because they're afraid they're going to die. If they knew they can get COVID and beat it in a week, they wouldn't have the fear. It's the fear of death. So, in essence, you're not going to say in these words, but you don't have the time to stop yourself from dying? Like, how absurd is that? If you really don't have the money, then I cannot ask you to invest anything. But if you're spending $250 a week going to restaurants and part of it is going to a glass of wine, then doesn't it make sense to channel a little of that so you can live a better life with less fear? So don't just expect that people come in and have those objections. Really be practiced in how to overcome them because you can. I learned a very long time ago that no means maybe, and maybe means yes. And while that may sound very kind of salesy, it's a mindset for me that when I go, so you want to get started right now? And they go, no, I don't usually do things the first time. I realize we're just in a conversation. They didn't really say no. I mean, if they really meant no, they'd leave. Like, if they're still sitting there, no, they want this. We just haven't hit it yet. So practice overcoming those two most common objections, and your closing percentage, at the very least, goes way up. I'm suggesting, recognizing everything I just shared with you about the economy and how tentative we are, find, identify, and exploit pipelines and non-competitive alliances. Now, I'm doing this right now, so I'm going to share with you what I'm doing. Every year around now, I run the 12 Days of Fitness promotion. I know some of you have run some version of it, and it's worked well. Not always, but sometimes. So the 12 Days of Fitness promotion for me is all of our members get these two beautiful certificates. And the certificates are to be given as gifts. And I know most of you know this because we've done this last year and the year before it, but it's worth repeating because I'm in it right now. And the idea is give these as gifts. They give people 12 days of membership. Now, I start the promotion the day after Thanksgiving. And it says on the certificate, this must be activated in person. You can't activate it online or on the phone. This must be activated by December 23rd. So what happens is the week after Thanksgiving, 15 people come in with the certificates. Following week, 20 people. The following week, 15 people. But when we get to just before Christmas, hundreds come. because they got to activate it before it expires. So if I'm prepared to offer some incentive for those people to join now, they do. Or if I'm prepared to sell them a short-term program for the rest of the year, they'll buy it. But it's really great for traffic. Now, I couldn't have done it successfully in 2020, but I'm optimistic right now. As I said, I mean, the panic has reduced significantly. I still get people coming in with masks, but not as much. And even the ones who come in with masks, if we say something, they very often take it off. Like we'll say, well, we don't require masks. You're free to wear it if you want. And they go, oh, and sometimes they take it off. They go, thank God. So I'm really optimistic about this year, this promotion. But what I just said to you is find, identify, and exploit pipelines and non-competitive alliances. Well, this is a great vehicle for me to do that. Because in the envelope, along with the two certificates, I put certificates from other local businesses. And the only requirement I have for that other local business who we choose to partner with is that they offer a dollar value to the certificate. $50 off with a $200 check. That's okay. You know, spend $200 in my restaurant, we'll give you $50 off. Buy a bottle of something and get a second bottle free. And then it says minimum purchase $18 or something. So we need a dollar amount, because now what I do is I total up all those dollars and I put a value to the envelope. So in this envelope, we have two 12-day certificates. They say on them $350 value. So already I'm at $700, but now I'm adding in whatever the chiropractor that I partner with gives me, whatever the high-end restaurant that I partner with gives me, whatever the medical place gives me. So now I build it up. So I go, here's an envelope. It's a gift to you with over $1,000 in value. So we ask the members to come pick it up, and if they don't pick it up by a certain day, we mail it to them. Now this year, I'm including all of the members I've had going 6 months back before COVID, including people who joined for a month or two. So I have 947 going out. This is really easy for me to walk into local businesses and go, hey, listen, I have 947 envelopes I'm sending out. Would you like me to include an offer? And they go, how much? And I go, no, nothing. They go, what's the catch? I go, nothing. We're looking to partner and affiliate with local businesses and holiday. We want people to kind of get an opportunity to see all of the connection that we have. In addition, we're inviting people to come into our place. So why not allow them to come into yours? And at first, they're always skeptical. They go, well, what do I have to pay? Nothing. For real. The only thing you have to do is make up 1,000 certificates. Like, I'm not printing them for you. You just got to give me the certificates. We'll stuff them in the envelope. So we're there. We got all of them. We're over $1,000 value. But all of these businesses now become my pipelines. What do I mean by that? I mean, now I go back to the business owners who are now friends, allies, and I say, hey, because I appreciate you partnering with us on this promotion, I'd like to give a 12 days of fitness certificate to all of your employees and whoever you think your most valuable customers are. And now they give me a list. And I don't hand them blank certificates ever. They have to give me a list. And then I come back with the certificates made out, because these are all leads. So find your pipelines that will promote you to their people, to their customers. And this promotion is just a real opportune vehicle by which you can recruit them. I'm not there yet, but I'm working on it with our web guy. I'm also creating a checklist. So when people get their envelope, for every vendor they visit, for everyone they take advantage of, they check a box. And for every box checked, they get 10 bio bucks, which means $10 in value they can use in my place. Is it worth it? Yeah, I think it's going to be worth it, because I think when the vendors start seeing people come in with the certificate, they're just greater alliances for me. And I'm happy to give somebody $40, $50, $60 off if they're going to come in and buy a membership for $250 or more. So that's a promotion I'm working now, but it comes from everything that I just shared with you. So I would say for all of you, find, identify, and exploit pipelines and non-competitive alliances, because regardless of what happens out there, all of these people are trying to stay in business along with you. And if they're truly alliances, then you can work together. And because they're non-competitive, they share their secrets. They share their lists. Any thoughts, comments, questions about anything at all? Anybody still breaching out there? Give me an indication there's life out there. Okay, good.
Well, I mean, I like the intricacy of what you're talking about, and how well thought out it is, and it kind of pertains to what you were talking about before, which is what I'm looking into now, which is that medical alliance. I mean, that's the real big one that I'm focused on now. And I'm assuming that you're still doing that, and that's like, you know, that's the one that really has me excited. I mean, I'm not there right now with what you're discussing, but the medical alliance is still something super interesting to me.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure I told you that I have a medical office that I have. I have an office that I don't pay for in a medical office. I go up there every Wednesday, and it's great. It's just simple. It's no effort on my part. They set the appointments. People pay $150 for a consultation, 100% goes to me, and I credit them the $150 toward the reboot if they decide to buy it right then and there, and it's been great. But this is why I'm saying right now, based on everything I just shared with you, I'm questioning, and I don't have the answer, I'm really questioning, is it better to partner, to really, you know, build this next step by partnering with medicine, or just challenging it, just letting the medical field do what the medical field does, and then kind of picking up the pieces of the people when they fall. Medical alliances have been really great for me. And, you know, you guys have met Dr. Blyweiss, Brazilia. I mean, these are just my allies. So I wouldn't let go of those. But do I want to partner with medicine publicly on a larger scale? Maybe. I don't know. So, Tony, do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, I think right now, based on what you said, your answer is yes, you should. But I may have greater strength. And the difference is, when I'm working with these doctors on Wednesday, it's all positive. There's no downside. It's just a beautiful setup. But the question I have is, can I leverage this? Like, I want to open another facility. So can I leverage this and build a massive platform? I don't know, because the medical field is not unified. Not all doctors are as progressive as these guys. And when I meet with people in consultations and I hear what they've been through, case in point, the guy with the hands with the autoimmune, I just feel like, you know, I've got to be in a position where I could go, medicine is misleading you. And I'd be speaking truth. Like, I have no apprehension in doing that. So you should certainly create some medical alliances, but I just mean on a larger scale. Do we want that level of positioning, or is it better for us to kind of be in a separate circle and go, well, here's what the medical field does, and here's what we do?
Well, I guess the only way that that could be something that's viable is if you have a medical alliance with someone who agrees with you, right? I mean, and who's fashioning their business accordingly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the dream come true.
Right. And that's also the big challenge.
That's the big challenge. The big challenge is when you find the doctors, you know, Tony, we've used the word maverick to describe you in certain ways, right? So when we look at the Dr. Blywises of the world, they're the mavericks. They're like, I've been through that system. I know how fucked up it is. I had the number one Humana billing company in Florida. I'm not doing that anymore. Like, they're so in their own bubble that you've got to find creative way to connect with each one, but there's no system that will work because there's no actual group. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's not an avatar. He's just a guy. And the same is true with these doctors, is they're typically not mirror images of something else where you can replicate something. Where if you go into conventional medicine, the alliance is bring me in, because you already have the audience. Like, they're getting the patients. They're getting the patients who have type 2 diabetes. They're getting the patients who have hypothyroid issues. So there's a much better potential in terms of just sheer volume to connect there. But you've got to soften your attack on medicine. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm being clear, but this is a little of my teetering point right now. As I'm looking at opening a second, third location, I want to have a consistent position. I don't want to say, well, in this one facility, we partner with a medical, but here we don't. Like, I'd like to just kind of find the plug-in. So I'm not asking you to answer it, but it's just kind of my thought process these days. I haven't figured out the answer to that yet. But for
yes,
the Medical Alliance will serve you. Go ahead.
Well, let me ask you this. What is the motivation for the company having you, you know, have an office and everything goes your way? You know, what is their, what's their benefit? What, why are they doing that?
When I first came in, I proposed that they start doing IVs. So what we did is a 50-50 split on everything I brought in and the IVs that came in from all of those customers. So if I bring somebody in and they spend $200 on IVs a month, then every month that they get an IV, I get $100.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually what they saw was everyone we send to him is signing up for IVs.
Okay.
Let's let him keep all the money just to have him here, and we'll just keep the IV money. So that was our meeting. And they said, listen, we'll give you everything you generate. So if you want to sell your own program, you can sell it, but let's not do the split anymore. You just keep what you generate. And you can get the customers. Like, if they buy your reboot, good. You can keep them in your live group or whatever. So that's where we landed. So the motivation is money.
Gotcha. So in the beginning,
the office they gave me used to be the office of a nurse practitioner. They couldn't afford her anymore.
Right.
So it was dead space. So they had no loss. It was like a perfect connection.
So initially you were sourcing patients for them, and then afterwards they started sourcing clients for you. So it's symbiotic in that regard.
Initially I came in saying I could help your people get well in a way that they're not, and you could make more money selling IVs. So it was, yes, I could bring people here, and also you could promote me in-house to your patients. They saw the virtue in just let's send all of our patients with chronic disease to him. So every Wednesday I have three back-to-back appointments, sometimes two, sometimes three. But if I wanted to do 4 days a week, they would book me 4 days a week. There's no shortage. So I don't market that at all. They send me the patients now. But I didn't come in asking for that. That's just the way it evolved.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I don't know if I should share this because I'm not suggesting anybody else do this, but I do know the way they set it up is they created a separate company for the IVs.
Okay. So they basically saw it as just a new revenue stream, and this guy can help us develop that, and then if it made sense, okay, we'll give you all
I guess for a number of reasons, they didn't want it under the umbrella of their regular business, so that if anybody tries to shut them down and says they're outside of scope of practice. So the business is actually owned by one of the doctor's brothers, and I may have said too much. But from a revenue perspective, it's a beautiful deal. They had dead space that is now generating revenue.
And you're still bringing them patients?
I don't.
You don't?
No. I don't need to.
Okay. Well, I'm still confused about what is their continued motivation to have you there then.
A patient comes in from their insurance.
Uh-huh.
The patient gets treatment and a drug prescription, and the doctor's office makes $78.
Mm-hmm.
Now they take a dead space and they put something in that dead space, me. And now, rather than that patient generating $78, that patient now spends $400 a month on IVs. Now, we multiply that by 20. So now we have 20 patients who are already in their system, but we're not generating money for them, coming back and getting IVs, paying $400 a month.
Gotcha, because based upon when they see you, you're recommending the IVs.
Yes.
Got it. Okay.
That's what it evolved to. That wasn't my initial plan, but that's what it turned into. So now I don't have to bring patients there.
Yeah. Got
they
it.
Could fill up. That's why I said to you, they could fill me up 4 full 9 to 5 days every week.
Right.
But I just show up because, Wednesdays.
Right, because the benefit that they know, when they come to see you, you're going to give them your assessment, your consultation, and then you know that there's going to be a springboard back for something that's going to be driving revenue for them.
Correct.
Okay.
So they spend $150 with me.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, I sell them on the reboot, and I say, if you commit right now, and I set them up in Kajabi, if you commit right now, I'll credit you the $150, and you just pay $397 for the online reboot.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to get 50% off your first IV. Stop at Carol's desk and make your appointment on the way out.
Gotcha.
So now that money goes directly to me. They don't touch it. It goes directly into my system.
Mm-hmm.
But now that patient who wasn't going to generate any more money for them comes back for an IV, and then they set them up on a recurring basis. So I'm going to guess as a result of having me there, they probably increased their monthly revenues by $25,000.
Got it. Because by the time you start having people recurring, and you
yes.
multiply that for the amount of people that you're closing on. Yeah, so you're like a cash cow for them.
Yep.
Got it.
Yep, and it's a nice deal for me because I also get the people.
Yeah.
Like they're now in my system. They're following my reboot.
Right.
And that's not a threat to them because I'm not doing IVs online.
Right.
Right?
Right, I get it.
Is it clicking? Making sense?
It's making sense. But, you know, what I find interesting is that you know, it had to evolve to get to that point. And I can see that. But also it's based upon your ability to gain rapport and to close the client on that.
Correct.
So obviously you're doing it well and consistently.
Yes. And then that's what they tell people. They go, okay, listen, before you leave here, you got to make an appointment to see Phil Kaplan. He comes in on Wednesdays. They go, why? He's going to help you reverse your condition. Oh, okay. That's the way it goes. It's
right.
Honestly, it's not even selling for me. Like, they come in expecting
right. it. So when they book, they're also paying for it, right? I mean,
yes.
I guess they're being built. Right, so they pay ahead of time, and then they, you know, so obviously if they're investing in it up front, then they're going to be a whole lot more likely to show up. Got it.
I've had probably in the last year, and this is even with COVID, there were a few, maybe 2 months where I didn't go there. But with that exception, I've had 2 cancellations. That's it. And both of them for good reasons. I've never had like a no-show where I'm sitting there waiting for somebody and they don't show up. Never.
Well, I get it. They're phrasing to the doctor that he's going to help you reverse your situation, which is reverse your condition, which is, you know, when have they gone to a doctor and heard that before?
Never. Yeah. So I know this is a unique setup, but I cultivated it just from meeting these guys at a conference.
Got it.
What happened is I spoke at a conference they were at, and then they said, we're having a little event. We'd like you to speak at it. And that's how it developed. So it came out of that, and then I said, well, why don't we form – at the time I was working with Brasilia, and I told them how I'm working it with her. We were doing reboot programs and doing a 50-50 revenue share, and we were selling them for $800. So, you know, that was the initial discussion. Then I went, and they said, well, you could have this office space. So it just kind of took on a life. But I think through it all, I just saw where they had a need. They needed more money. They were paying rent for space they weren't using, and their patients were a revolving door. So they had no way to generate residual revenue from their patients.
Right.
And I think that's common, Tony. I think, like, everyone has this idea that doctors are just making money. But a lot of these places have empty treatment rooms.
Right.
So if you're the right guy and you're not a threat to them, but you're an asset, why would they not give you the treatment room?
Right.
All right. I got your wheels turning.
Yes,
right?
Yes, you do.
I can hear them grinding.
Yes, you do.
All right. Good call, guys. I look forward to moving forward in the other side of this crazy disruption. But I see, really, as I shared with you what sounds like there could be some doom and gloom, I really see nothing but opportunity in front of us. So let's capitalize on it. Until we speak again, be better, everybody. Bye-bye.